Okay, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speaker meeting or 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Brian.
Sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989. That's through God's grace, Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sponsor who still tells me the truth today. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous in the life I'm living today. It is a plan and is designed for living. It's amazing. When I follow it, great things happen. And also when life stuff is going on and I follow it, it doesn't seem to be as painful. So if you're new and you're like, what does this have to do with not drinking? Well, it has everything to do with not drinking. That's what I realize, is I have a living problem today and a thinking and all the other stuff. But what happens, I have a solution. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, my motto for this month is people between 5 and 10 years who are staying sober and going through that life stuff and not drinking. To me, that's the miracle, not drinking through the life stuff, good or bad. So if you're new, just keep coming back. Thanks. All right, the group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around and talking while the person is sharing. And our speaker this evening, I've had the privilege and honor of watching her come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and have a smile on her face. And there was a time when she did not have a smile on her face. And the great thing is I've got to watch her go through stuff in the rooms, outside the rooms, and stay sober. And still come to meetings, still work with women, still do the things that we're supposed to do. And, you know, I enjoy watching people in the rooms not drink no matter what. You know, to me, that's the miracle. So I would like to present Suzanne. Please give her a warm welcome.
Hey, everybody. I'm Susan. Suzanne. Sue. Cat lady. If you know me, you'll get a real kick out of that, because like alcohol, one cat's not enough. I've got 12. So, but I don't drink. So there was a time when I was probably caught a lot worse than Sue and Suzanne and Susan. And Susan Elaine meant I was in trouble. My mother was calling me that. My sobriety date is February the 2nd, 2005, and College Park Triangle is my home group. We meet every Thursday at 7 o'clock, so come and see us. However, this is where I got started. This is where it all began for me at Central. I came here in July of 2004. I was in my mid-40s. I'm 51. You can do the math. I'll be 52 this year. It took me a long time to get here, and it was very painful. Most of it self-induced. And I don't know the page numbers, but I know in the book it says we have been reborn somewhere in this book. And I'm going to share with you how I've been reborn, because it's a miracle. I was born in a loving family. I think I was wanted. What did he say? Oh, that's funny. You too, huh?
I was just identifying.
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, you know, I never really thought about that. I assume I was. I think it was a surprise, but I think I know that I was very, very loved from my mother and my grandmother and my grandfather. My granny and granddaddy were my parent figures. My parents divorced when I was very young. I was number four of five kids, the fourth girl. And I was born in Winter Haven, Florida, and I grew up in Auburndale, Polk County. We called it Polk County. And we used to go to the grocery store barefooted back in those days, but we don't do that anymore. Grew up in the orange groves, and that's where we did a lot of our partying. Pickup trucks and orange groves and roll bars and bulldogs. Pool halls, too. But I didn't get there until I was about 14 or 15 anyway. that didn't sound right. Maybe I was 16. I was probably drunk. Maybe I was 16. Okay. I was running away from home though, and at an early age. Good to see you. I remember my parents divorced when I was very young. My mother had five kids, ages 4 to 11, when Dad left, and that was a long time ago. And back in that day, a divorced woman was a scorned woman. And my mother, we were Baptist, and we went to church all Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. Had to go. Didn't like it. Was made to go till I wouldn't go anymore. Till my mother couldn't make me go anymore. I mean, I'm glad she did now, but I wasn't real happy about it back then. But she was very proud, prideful, and didn't know how to ask for help. You know, I think it's really how today is. Unfortunately, divorce is not a big deal today, and it should be. It should be. But my mother was very, very proud and didn't know how to ask for help. And people just didn't talk about things. So we grew up not talking about anything. My dad never showed up except to bring us something. He had money. And he had women problems, and I had daddy issues. So I had man problems later, but we'll get to that. He would show up every once in a while, and he'd have a trunk load of stuff, or he'd pick us up and take us somewhere really nice and take us boating or take us to Disney or show us something that money could buy. And we thought that he was the greatest thing in the world. And the wonderful thing about my mother is that she never told us about him or how he was. I've gone through a lot of processing with my dad issues, but he really did a number on my mother, but she never said anything bad about him, ever. She let us decide, and it must have been hard for her because he stepped out on her, and he was her first love, and he would come to our house, and all we talked about was dad, 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 this, dad, that. Oh, my God, and Dad could fix anything, and Dad can do this, and Dad can do that, and she just never said a word. And in retrospect, I look back, and that was really painful for her. One thing she did say, she didn't stand up to a lot of stuff, but one thing she did say to him is she did stop him from bringing the clothes from whatever current wife he had, daughter's clothes for us. We were very poor. We lived in a little wood frame house, and we didn't have any money, and Granny and Granddaddy were down the street, and they were the ones that took care of us kids. My three older sisters were the big kids. And us, my brother and I were the little kids. And the little kids couldn't do what the big kids could do. But we didn't grow up with my dad, so we didn't really know what that was like. We just had my mom, who worked all the time, and my big sister babysat us, and she's kind of bossy. And Granny and Granddaddy were our safe place to land. That was the safe place to go. And I've been sober a few years. My childhood's gotten better since I've been sober. When I got here, you know how that is, right? Isn't that funny? When I got here, it was like, oh, it's horrible. But when I think about the things that I did, and I began to see my own age, when I go, kids today don't know what a corded telephone is, and my grandmother had a party line. I bet you don't know what that is. And we'd pick it up and listen, and we listened to the party line, and we played in Granddaddy's plant nursery, and we climbed trees, and you know, we played in the yard, and we played and kick the can and tag football and kids stuff. You kids don't know what that is. You got to have electronics and stuff, and I do too. And I only text and drive at the red light. but anyway, so I had a decent childhood. It wasn't bad. The problem was me. I came out the chute mad. I was ticked off from the time I entered the world, I feel like. And I learned all that here. It's not like I made up a story of there, but I mean, I learned about me and who I am and what makes me tick and what doesn't make me tick, and how I can be a better person and contribute to the world and actually enjoy being a part of the world. From an early age, I would hold my breath and hope I would pop. My veins would pop out. I mean, 3 or 4 years old, I remember clearly holding my breath, scratching myself, pulling my hair out in chunk pulls, and just tormenting myself and my family too. I knew at a young age how to light up a room if I felt like it, and I knew how to darken it It just depended on the mood I was in. I was very funny. I was a pretty little girl. I was vivacious and outgoing or not. And when I was not, just like drinking, I could be funny and vivacious and buzz and on top of the world and you would love me. And the next day I'd have the same amount and I wasn't so pretty. Another line in the book that keeps coming to me today is, an alcoholic in their cups is a very unlovely creature. Mm-hmm. That is so true. An alcoholic, in my cups, I feel like growing up, I felt like an unlovely creature. I didn't know why I was here, why I was, I felt like I was dropped off, plopped into this world, and I just woke up in this alien body in the fourth grade, and I didn't know how I got here. And stuff came back in pieces, but it was just this mix of, I couldn't get in touch with this body. It was always like an out-of-body experience. I don't know if that makes any sense. I always felt disconnected to myself. And so my mother tried so hard, and I just didn't care about, I mean, I wanted her to love me, but I wanted her to leave me alone. I cared, but I didn't care. I cared, but I was determined to do whatever I wanted to do anyway. I would clean the house, run the vacuum, dust the piano, and run away from home. Call her up. You still love me? Okay, I'm fine. I'm not coming home. Click. The next day, come home, clean the house, fold the clothes, dust the piano, vacuum, run away from home. I love you. Tell me where you are. I'll come get you. Can't. It's a secret. Click. You know, and I wanted to hang out with the kids that smoke cigarettes. Now it's so much more than that. But cigarettes was cool and bad. And my sponsor said she thought smoking cigarettes got you pregnant, you know. Yeah, so I did too. So, but I wanted to smoke cigarettes, and you know, I got a tattoo when I was 16, and it wasn't cool then. Okay, like now it's nothing, and I'm so proud that I have one now. But I got the one at 16. I'll get back to the cigarettes. This is really funny because, you know, tattoos, it was taboo tattoo. That's when I hang out at the pool hall. So I got the tattoo, and you know, it cost me $15. And so when I would drink, I had this rose on my back hip right here. Get really drunk with these people, and I'd go, "Want to see my tattoo?" Because I was act like I was going to pull down my pants, and they'd be like, "Yeah." I had it removed. Wait, I didn't tell you that part. So I had it removed later. So I'd act like I was going to pull my pants down, and they'd go, "Yeah." And I'd go, whoosh, and I'd pull out a jar of formaldehyde with this floating tattoo in it. I know. And I thought it was so funny. After a while, I did it for 2 years till it looked like worse than a worm in a tequila bottle. You know what I mean? It's like, it was nasty. It didn't look like a rose to me, even. So, but that's the stuff I did drunk. Actually, that's the stuff I would do sober, back before I even knew how to drink. I mean, I did some bizarre stuff that I thought was really funny. You see my tattoo? You know, and they'd be like, "She is weird." Don't stay with her. But I really had a weird look on life, I think. And my perception of the world was really different, right or wrong, twisted, and my family did not understand that, and I didn't understand it. I didn't know what that was. I really believed the things that I believed, you know, and I was raised in the church, and I had to go to church, and, you know, in the Baptist church, we like to have an altar call every Sunday. You know, "Come on down, just a family that won't leave, God shed for me, come on down. And, you know, every now and then, the conviction starts, and come down there, and a little tear, and something strikes a chord, and I felt it, and it didn't stay. I couldn't, like, I don't know, I couldn't get it, whatever it was I was feeling, how to live, to get from here to here. But I wanted so, so bad to connect with the world and myself. In A Vision for You, I underlined something that I wanted to read to you. It says, in the last page, 164, it says, "You must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave." I just found that today. I just opened the book and found it. I'm like, how do I create the fellowship I crave? I didn't even know I was looking for a fellowship, but I knew I was craving something when I, all my life. It took 43 years to get here. That's a long time. That's a really long time to be fighting with oneself. My mother would always say, you're your own worst enemy. You know, I hated that. And I didn't know what it meant, but I know what it means today. And so, okay, so I smoked cigarettes, and I would skip school, and I quit school at 16, and because I wanted to grow up. I always wanted to grow up. I don't know what that meant, but I wanted my own money. I wanted my own car. I didn't want you to tell me what to do. I don't like authority. I don't like cops. Still struggle with them. I know I have to pull over if they put the lights on, and I have to be respectful. I'll probably end up marrying one or something. You know. Put that uniform on. We all have our sordid past. And then if he's not a cop, I'll probably go buy him a uniform or something. I don't know. You just never know. You know, this stuff, this grown-up business is hard work. And so I always wanted to grow up, and I quit school at the 11th grade. My mom couldn't make me go to school. I had 5 A's and a C, and I never cracked a book in the 11th grade, and I walked away. Never cracked a book. 5 A's and a C. And that, for that 1 second, though, I went, I wonder if I should have stayed, you know. But by the time the senior year started, I was done. I went to adult evening high school. It's not a GED. It's a high school diploma. I can't even remember it because I met this really cool girl named Frankie. And Frankie had the best other substances to smoke with what you drink. And so me and Frankie just stay buzzed. And we, you know, I have marijuana's in my story. Alcohol's my love, was, not today. But I'm a 60s baby, so we grew up, you know, we called them heads. We were heads, four-finger bags and all that stuff. Mexican weed and stuff. That you could smoke the whole bag now and not even feel it. But it's a good thing I don't do that now because it's killer stuff. But anyway. So that's what I did. I quit school and I went to work full-time. And I've been working ever since. Full-time. I've always looked fairly good on the outside. I've had a nice car. I've had a decent apartment. I always fixed it up real cute with whatever furniture I could find from anyone or on the sidewalk. I always make it look really homey and cozy. And so the outside appearances looked really good, but the inside was an absolute train wreck. And as the years went on, you know, I've discovered alcohol around 16, and I discovered sex around 16. But here's the sad part. I don't remember who my first sexual partner was. It was either this one or this one. They were good friends, so probably was both. I think it was, but not at the same time. Not at the same time, because that was later when I was really drinking. But and it's okay, because, and I'm okay with it. I don't do that anymore. And I don't like that I did that, but that is, it is what it is. And I was very, I have a colorful history in my relationships, or relations, because they were no relationships. And I tried to look at myself as, I just wanted somebody to love me. And I looked at myself as, I was selective over who I went out with. I mean, you had to have fill a certain criteria. I mean, that's, I wasn't a slut. I was picky. So, oh, that's a laugh. That's a good one. You too, huh? It's good we didn't drink together.
Neither one of us would be here.
No. It'd be a mess. I mean, and it got ugly. I mean, but I genuinely did not look at myself as a sleaze bag. I looked at other women as that. She's such a hoe, but not me, because I was picky. So I really didn't, and I would talk about other girls like that so I'd feel better about myself, and, you know, I'd tell their dirt so I'd feel better about myself. And all that was, that's how I behaved. And from 16. I got married at 19. I moved to from Auburndale to Apopka. And yeehaw, and I married the guy that I met in the pool hall, because he had a big truck, and I guess that's it. He had a big truck. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm like serious. I'm like, I really don't know. No, the judge, he was got caught for selling some stuff to people, and he got popped. The judge in Polk County said, you need to leave county. And he's like, we're going to move to Apopka. And I went, I'm going to go with you. And we got us a mobile home on his grandma's property and a dog. And 9 months later, I was sleeping with the other guy, you know, and he'd say, you're cheating on me. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. You know, and no. Check my breath, you know, whatever. And I took a shower afterward. And anyway, I close your mouth. It's all right. It gets better. It gets better. It gets so much better. I so belong here. And while I was married to that guy, I moved to Orlando, or Apopka, but I worked in Orlando, the big city. So I got me a job, and I started dating the realtor there, because it was real estate. I was secretary in a real estate office, and he was 14 years older than me, so he was going to teach me a few things, and he did. And so he left his wife for me, so I left my husband for him, because we loved each other. And anyone that would show me attention, or in a physical way, a man... the women came later, but it was always with the man. So, and
it didn't count.
It counted. I didn't like it. I didn't even like that. It's my style. And I was always had to be pretty drunk to do that stuff. And it made me feel really bad about myself when I did things like that. That's the point. And even when I did stuff like that with the people that I was, the men that I chose, that I selected, I felt really ugly and dirty, and I couldn't wash it off enough. And that's my whole story could go on. We drank, we did drugs, we partied. The older man, we had a fight. I'm a drama queen. He pushed me. He just caught me just right. It broke my jaw. He traumatized me. I still tried to date him after I had a broken jaw and do things for him with a broken jaw, with my mouth wired shut. It's okay. Use your imagination. Use your imagination.
Oh, Jesus.
Are you going to go? I don't know who's funnier. But you are so helping me. So, I guess he could imagine what I would try to do with my mouth. Because I loved him. And I wasn't going to tell that part. It is part of my story. It is the desperation of how I felt about myself. It really is a huge part. And there's this number of them after that. And so I, you know, all right. This is serious business, so this sobriety thing. And this, I so wanted to be okay with anyone. I just thought someone's going to realize how wonderful I am inside and choose me and marry me. And they did, but I divorced them, or they divorced me. And take me away from all this. I'm still, there was a book I read years ago, The Cinderella Syndrome. And it was a Christian book. My family always gave me Christian books to read. But that one I finished. I have tons of great self-help books. None of them are finished, but I'm keeping them just in case. And but the only book that I need, and this is a big book, it's just a different version, is this one. This is the book that has, and I don't go through the book. I don't know how to go through the book. I try to live what's in the book, because people before me have taught me how to do that. And I didn't learn that growing up. It's not my mom's fault. It's not my dad's fault. He did the best he could with what he had where he was. He didn't know how to love. His love language was conditioned. If you were good enough or smart enough or made straight A's or were on the valedictorian, whatever, you know, then we were acceptable to him. And my brother and I didn't stand a chance, because we were dumb little kids from Auburndale that would never be anything. That our granddaddy got excited when they changed the clothes on the mannequin in the storefront. Those were the things that he told us, that we were like, God, we're really not that bad. But we believed we were, because he told us we were. And he was a big shot from Orlando with a big car, with a stupid horn that went, "Ahooga!" Come on, Dad. That was really bad. That was embarrassing. That was embarrassing. As smart and as wonderful as he was, and as much as we thought of him, I was embarrassed of that stupid ooga horn. But, you know, today I would put one on my bicycle. Because I think, I don't know if it's being sober or being past 50, but you just don't care anymore. So you feel like, bing, bing, ooga, ooga. And it's like being in the grocery store in the car. What's up? And it's so cool because I'm okay in a restaurant by myself. I'm just okay by myself. I'm okay with me. And it took so long to get there. You know, just it was a lot of work. So I broke the jawbreaker guy. We broke up. Because I called him Paula. And then I married another guy some years back. I got Kevin, because Kevin was he made money. He made a good money. He had a good job. He was buff, and that's it. He was nice to look at. He was pretty, and he didn't seem to drink. And by then, this was in '96. So by then, I lived in apartment complexes. I'm famous for geographical cures. I move from place to place to place, and I can pick out an apartment in any end of Orlando. I get new carpet. I got the right corner. I've got the right view. I've got the right furniture. It looks good. I got a nice car, a fresh new face at the pool. When it doesn't work for me anymore, I break the lease, or I live out the lease. I move to another apartment, to another end. I start over. I get new carpet. I get away from the dumpster, away from the elevator. Whatever it is, I can move. I live downstairs. So then everywhere I go, I've learned, there I am. I just take myself with me. And so this guy, Kevin, I married. I lived in an apartment, and I was partying at the pool. But something in me said, you need to slow down. And he didn't drink at the time, and he worked out. And that was great. So it took me 2 weeks to get him. Let me see how this goes. 2-6, 2-6. 2 weeks to get him in bed with me. 6 weeks to get him to move in with me. I mean, 6 weeks is a long time. And 2 years to get him to marry me, and 6 years to get rid of him. So, I didn't drink. You know, I didn't drink when I was with him for the first year. And then it was boring. I mean, he was boring. And there wasn't any substance. I was probably boring, too. I'm not trying to diss on him. I had issues. But because today we're friends. We went through a terrible divorce. Today we're not friends. We're okay with one another. But if I met him today, I wouldn't be interested in him, you know, because that's not a person I would be interested in. I'd see him as a nice guy, and I would see him as a nice guy, and I'd make my judgments and try to work on that. so anyway, right? You know. So I fast forward to where I am today and how I got here. There's so much more, but we don't have enough time to cover all that stuff. I think you got the gist of I am an alcoholic, and I belong here. I was. I don't know what it means when people say I drank alcoholically from the beginning. I don't really know what that means. I know that before I drank, I was crazy. And when I drank, I was crazy. And sometimes I wasn't as crazy, but I never knew. And I didn't know I never knew, or how to define that or put that into words, till I got here and y'all taught me what all that meant. And then I'm like, oh, I'm just sick. But, you know, if I said to my family, I'm sick, they'd be like, you know you're sick. You're real sick. When are you going to admit that and do something about it? And I'm like, no, no, really, really. Y'all get it. I've been to counselors. I've been to pastors. I've been to ministering, and I've been down to church. And all that's okay, too, because I'm getting outside help now. I got some stuff going on. But it's different. The things that I heard growing up, I couldn't get them here till I got in here. How does that happen? How does that happen? We make a wreck of our lives, and we get a do-over when we show up. All we have to do is stay. And if you go out and come back, stay. And if you go out and come back, stay. But don't take any more chances. You might not get to come back. You might not want to. You might not be able to. I don't know if I could come back. I hope so, but I hope I don't go out. So the only way I can ensure that is to show up every day and stay close to y'all and the program and my peeps. And it's a big deal, you know. I don't get a pass from this hamster wheel. It still goes nuts. I work for a criminal defense attorney, personal injury, criminal defense, love criminal law. I love people like me. Criminals. I do. And I love criminal law. It's interesting, and it's not always as it seems either. I've seen both sides. Cops don't always tell the truth. I have to respect them as much as I have to, but it's not always as it seems, and there's always two sides to every story. I got a DUI in 1998, and I got another one in 2003. I got divorced from Kevin in 1998. My father, biological father, passed away. My stepfather, who was very instrumental in my life, passed away. I had some surgeries that were significant, but you know, nothing big deal. But a lot happened. I lost my house that I had with my husband. I lost the car I had and my status of what I thought I was on the outside and all the things that I had that made me who I was. I have had a job with a lawyer. I've worked with him for 16 years. That lawyer, after I got divorced from the husband, and the lawyer and I, who's a friend of mine today, we're not speaking though because we need the space. We always had a heart for one another, but we didn't have an affair during my marriage. We had an affair of the heart, though, and I learned what that was much later. We didn't physically have an affair, but my husband always accused us of having an affair because an affair to him is the act of sex, and that's all it was to him. But I learned later that we can have an affair without having sex, and we did. So I gave him that on the men's part, but I only gave him that. That's it. But he was right in that regard, so I had to make an amends for that. So after the divorce, I started dating the boss. Not a good idea. Marry him first, I don't know. But we dated, and I had gone from one horrible relationship. We fought, my husband and I fought, and beat each other up, and drank, and did things with other couples, and did very inappropriate things together, and apart, and not together, and just, it was not good. It was very, it was the end of my drinking, or the end of my our relationship, and it was just horrible. And so we finally got away from one another, but I was a train wreck, and I didn't have any in-between time. I jumped into the arms of another man, because he's going to take me away from all this, and he's going to recognize what a wonderful person. He did know that. He did know that. And so we had an opportunity to be together. And we were. And I was a horrible girlfriend. I'm mad at man still. I'm still mad at my dad. I got this husband over here that I've just got rid of. And I was not a good girlfriend. And that relationship for the 12, I don't even know what the years. 8 years, 9 years, we went off and on. And we worked together. It got mixed up with the work. It affected my work. I don't know if it's a guy thing, but he seemed to be able to switch between the two easier. I think it's probably a guy thing, but not for me. And so it would affect his practice. And I knew a lot about him. I behaved inappropriately. I withheld things from him because I had control. And he has a part in it, but I'm not there yet. I can only try to find my part in this relationship. So we broke up a couple times, and I knew that, you know, that hurt you see in someone's eyes when you've been drinking or misbehaving or acting inappropriate, or you've really hurt them, and you know that hurt that means they're done. That hurt, you see it mostly in your family's eyes, I do anyway. It's that hurt. Well, this is the reason I got here, was the hurt in that person's eyes, that lawyer that I worked for. That's how I got here. I just threw up on the people mover when he was pushing me out of the Hard Rock Cafe in a wheelchair, okay? So I'm like, vomiting all over everybody at the Hard Rock, and he's pushing me out, and we're wasted. And it was one of many things I did to him and with him. So the next day, I saw that look in his eye, and it said to me, I'm done. I'm your friend. You're going to have a job, but I'm not putting up with your BS anymore. And there was something in me. I had met y'all from somebody else who'd taken me to one of these classes, And I had met y'all and wasn't real impressed, but you know, it was okay. But that seed that was planted when I met y'all at that class said to me, I'm going to lose a friend, I'm going to have a job, and he cares about me. I couldn't get rid of my family. I wanted them to go away. I wanted them to leave me alone. I wanted them to stop loving me. They wouldn't, but this person was done. And again, I'd have a job, but I'm not going to have the other friend. And so I came here. I circled the block. I knew you were all looking at me. Everybody was standing around the front door. Ugh, it's horrible when you're new doing that, isn't it? It's terrible. It's hard. It takes a lot of courage. I'm not, for anyone that comes in, I'm like, man, God, just stay. Then you don't have to come in again. You know, it's hard. And I came in here and I said, I'm new. I don't know anything that was said except that everything that y'all said, I understood. For the first time in 43 years, I understood what you were saying. They're like, new person, first step. Ah! And then, of course, the attack begins, because when you leave, you hug, you touch, you hold hands, you grasp everybody. You're like, here's a big bug, come back. I'm like, don't touch me. You know, but they did. You did. And you followed me out the door holding a big book. Oh, just take this. I'm not going to read that. And you know what? My big book is so tore up now. It's great. And that's my favorite one, because it's all torn up and it's all highlighted. But I couldn't read it in the beginning. It was too hard. It was too heavy. Big words. Esoteric. Whatever. Ooh. And it was written by lawyers and they're too wordy and blah, blah, blah. All I wanted to do was feel better. I hated myself. I hated what I did to people. I hated how I hurt them. I hated how I behaved. I hated how I... When I drank, even with the lawyer that I really wanted to be with and got the chance to, we'd have parties. I'd behave inappropriately to all the other lawyers and judges we'd be around. And then expect him to respect me and treat me kindly when we'd go home. When I'd be like climbing in people's laps and, really? Really? He's kind of conservative too, you know. That wasn't very nice. Even if he wasn't conservative, it's not the thing you do with your boyfriend. I think he might be your husband because he ain't asking. right? He didn't ask. So I got in here and I heard my story, and I remember just crying that day and getting a white chip, and then somebody said to me, you don't have to drink today, you can drink tomorrow. That's all they said. And gave me that book, and I thought, okay, I'll drink tomorrow. And I got the benefit of being able to come down here every day at noon, because my office was right down the street where I worked. And I came every single day at noon for 6 months. Every day I was in here. And Ryan's right. I didn't like you. I didn't want what I had. I didn't know if I wanted what you had. I didn't want what I had. But you still spoke my language. So I'd come in right at 12 and scoot it out at 1. Don't touch me. Keep coming back. I work it. And for real. And I was so mad. And it was like I was just fighting mad. Just like, guess what, I like cats. You know, they're just like, vroom. And, you know, I can pet my cat for so long, and when they're done, dip, they're done. You know, they bit me, they're done. And, but y'all just kept loving, I don't know, I say loving me till I can love myself. That's kind of corny and cliche, but you were accepting, I think is the better word for me. You were just accepting, and they're like, she'll be all right. And she's all right today. She's okay. And I'm not mad. And I love my life today, but it hasn't been easy. That same lawyer, we've dated again, we didn't date again, we're in relationship purgatory, we're not, we are, we don't know, I don't know, do you love me, don't talk about the relationship, you know, he won't talk about it, and it's okay, but we don't talk about it. Anyway, I lost the job, 16 years, I lost the job, 2 months ago. I started the conversation, he disagreed, then he agreed, you should leave, and I'm like, but I don't want to, but I started it, because I knew I needed to. You know, so it was, you know what I mean? It's crazy. I'm like, I knew for years I needed to leave that place. That relationship was so toxic. And he's the very reason that I got here. I'm eternally grateful for that. I don't owe him my life for it. I can stay sober for that. And I can pray for him to see things differently or not, or that he would have peace, because I see in him much of myself. And he's got his own stuff to deal with. And I have finally learned I can't fix him. I can't do his work fast enough, good enough. I've never got off probation. The 7 years I've been sober, it didn't feel like it with him. He's still a daddy figure to me, and he was my higher power. He has been for years. If I could just do it good enough for him, whatever it was, he would love me, and he would stay with me. And eventually, he'd ask me to marry him. And I really wouldn't want to marry him. I don't really like all his family stuff and all that stuff, but, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to sell out a little bit. He's got a big house. House is nice. Room for the cats. And I'd justify everything, you know? And so when I lost that job, I've hit a bottom, and I have been going to a counselor. I've sought outside help, and I have 7 years later, what Brian said about between 5 and 10 years, so at 10, am I going to be okay? Something else is going to happen. Something else is going to happen. You know, here's the thing. He pays a lot of my bills. I'm very bonded to him, and it's kind of scary that I found myself in this position. I live in his house. And I pay a discounted rent. And so I started going to this counselor, and I lost this job, and I've got a part-time job in Volusia County with a lawyer, and it's a sweet little job, and there's no stress and no drama, and I'm finally able to admit that I might like it. I'm afraid to admit that I like that job. That little baby, sweet, no stress, laid-back job. I like it. I like that it's in Volusia County. I don't have any Orange County baggage. I've been around Orange County a long time. I don't know anybody there. It's new for me. It's, you know, because I've done some pretty bonehead things in sobriety, you know, and it's a nice little job. I went out this week, and I've been renting from this person for 9 years, and I got pre-qualified to buy a house, and I got a pre-qualification letter. I'm like, I need to buy a house. You know, and the mortgage is, I mean, I had a little bitty bit of money saved from the job, so he's blessed me with much. And it's time for the second half of my life to move on so I can get weller. You know, I had a little bit of a retirement. I'm like, what am I going to do? I got money. You know, but I can go through that fast. There's no penalty from the IRS to withdraw those funds if you're buying your primary residence. I didn't know that, but I'm willing, you know, and I don't have any money. I don't have any money saved, but I had that my boss contributed to for 16 years that doesn't feel like I have money. But that will allow me to buy a house, a little house, but a house, regardless, and it'll be mine. And I won't have to worry if he's going to up the rent or pull out on me or not do this or whatever not. And so as I've cut the umbilical cord and I don't want to say turned it over. I don't even like that term. Turned it over. I woke up this morning and I just turned it over to God and I had a beautiful day. And then I took it back and then I turned it over and then I took it back and then I turned it over. I don't get that either. I'm like, I don't know, man. I just get up and I forget to pray. And but I remember to, and I don't really think about it. I like let go or be dragged, but that's kind of the only one that resonates. But let go and let God, let go, let God, my let go or be dragged. That's all I know. When I'm dragged, and I like to be dragged. You know, I love to be dragged, drag me. You know, make it hard for me. And when things are taken away, we are reborn. And if we rely on a power greater than ourselves, we can be reborn, and just a day at a time. Don't drink today. You can drink tomorrow. Just listen to what the people have to say that have gone before you, us, before me. And, you know, I have some incredible sponsorship. I have some beautiful women in my life. You know, my focus finally after 7 years is not, how am I going to find a date tonight? Who am I going to marry? And I'm going to be selective, you know. I'm not even thinking about that. And when I don't think about that, then it'll come or it won't. It's not my idea and it's not my plan. And I am really getting free from the bondage of that other higher power. We have many higher. I have many higher powers. I mean, donuts, okay? Donuts. One's not enough. When the hot light's flashing at Krispy Kreme, I want 12. You know, and so, I mean, shopping, you know, and just whatever it is. I mean, it's just never enough. So I just, you know, thank you, Brian, for having me come share. And there's life after alcohol. There really is life after alcohol. And it can be good, and it can be fun, and it can be corny, Corny. I never went to an AA party with pickup trucks and Coca-Colas and speakers on the top. And oh, it's still a little corny for me, but I'll do it, you know. It's all good. You know, I feel better than most of the other people that went out the night before. So I feel real blessed, and I'm very, very grateful to be sober. I have some, again, amazing people in my life, and just, I try not to complicate it, because if I complicate it, I'm screwed. So let me read one more thing, and then I'm done. So I just want to wrap it up with this. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. And it's much like He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave to stay. May God bless you and keep you until then.